Hello and welcome to this PSG Think Big series podcast. In this program, Alicia Seckham speaks to Christopher Axelson on the key changes in the 2025 budget speech and the impact on South Africa's economic landscape.
Hello and welcome to the Think Big series brought to you by PSG. I'm Alicia Seckham, and having had some time to digest it all, today we're going to be taking a closer look at Budget 2.0. It may have finally been tabled by Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana, but it's still being heavily debated, and whether in fact it gets passed, another question altogether. So as much insight as we can get into the thinking that goes into putting that entire package together, perhaps just what's needed right about now to help make sense of it all. Joining us in conversation is someone who oversees the development and implementation of tax policies and financial regulation aiming to promote economic growth and stability, Chris Axelson. He's acting head of tax and financial sector policy at National Treasury. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today. And like I said, the 2025 budget has been tabled, but not passed. And this post the February postponement, right, further underlining that cabinet is no longer a rubber stamp to just any economic policy. Now, we have some saying this is a democracy at work, others that it shows cracks in the GNU, with members failing to engage meaningfully with alternative proposals. As a member of the team that deliberates and hopefully takes alternative proposals into consideration and advises the minister on the back of that, can you give us your take on the current status?
All right, thanks very much, Alicia. Thanks for having us as well. It's a difficult, it's a new environment. You know, we're not used to this. We're not used to going to Parliament with a fiscal framework which may or may not get approved in the next week or two. It can be seen as quite exciting, as democratic. There are lots of new voices that are coming into play, which is a good thing. And I think that is the uncertainty it creates is a little bit nerve-wracking, I think, both for us as well as the country. But hopefully we can get to a better process. I mean, I certainly wouldn't say that, you know, we don't take on new voices or new alternatives. You can see at Budget 1.0, you know, there was a set of proposals in there, and they were revised quite dramatically for the second budget, Budget 2.0. So there was certainly an element of give and take. I think obviously the issue is the VAT increase, and it's a very political issue. So we're seeing a lot of those politics play out, you know, in tax policy now and in terms of what we are trying to do. Which is fine. It's tax policy is a very political issue. And the ministers of finance previously have had a lot of sway in terms of what they want to do and what they don't want to do. But usually when they pronounce on a topic, it is done and it's passed and it goes through. Here that those voices are getting louder on the other side, and we will have to try and get to some agreement, and hopefully this budget can get passed in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, look, like you say, we stand in unprecedented times, right, where no majority brings to the fore an added dynamic to it all. To what extent has this crisis, and I'm going to call it a crisis, and I'm going to run with a blurb of an article I read the other day, to what extent, Chris, has it offered an opportunity to design a more democratic budget process, but more so a strengthening of South Africa's fiscal architecture?
Thanks. Yeah, I'm not sure if I would call it a crisis. You know, we look at a lot of other democratic countries and they take months, to form governments and form coalitions. And our coalition was formed quite quickly. And they also take a very long time to get their budgets through. So we're closer to those other democratic countries in terms of the process. And it has been quite quick, but we're all new at this. So we're all trying to find our feet. I think it is a strengthening. You know, we're looking at the different viewpoints, we're looking at, you know, different parties' concerns. I worry a little bit that it's almost too political, and then you might not get to the best outcome, you know, because there might be political games that are played. And, you know, as technocrats, you know, we want and are trying to get the most efficient way to hopefully run the country, but also to, you know, to get the best way forward. But you've got to balance those things, and they represent, you know, they are elected officials, they represent, you know, everybody who's voted for them. So we must listen to them very carefully and, you know, take heed. So it's trying to get that balance right. And we hope everybody can be quite reasonable in the way they approach these issues, and we can get to a good outcome.
So, Chris, what now? I mean, where does this leave us? With certainly the DA at this point adamant that it won't be approving the current budget as it stands.
So we'll have to see what comes out in the next couple of weeks and in terms of how they vote, both within the committee, the Standing Committee on Finance, which has had its first session on the fiscal framework. Then there will be public hearings on that fiscal framework. Then we will respond as Treasury in a couple of weeks' time. And then that report has to go to the National Assembly, and then it has to be voted on in the National Assembly. So I'm hoping that there can be an agreement, you know, within those next couple of weeks, both within the committee and in the NA, so that there can be enough votes to be passed. If there isn't, that'll be the first time that it hasn't happened. So that would be quite interesting. And then we'll have to see what to do from there. Either there will be amendments proposed by the committees, or we'll have to go back to the drawing board. There is a complication around the VAT increase in that currently, as it stands in law, because the minister announced it in the budget, it would be effective from 1 May. So how would we take that into account in the deliberations we do and if there were any changes? So these are all things that are quite new and new to us and new to the country, and we're going to have to assess day by day in terms of how it moves forward.
As you've been highlighting, Chris, I mean, the contention comes primarily with the fact that, you know, we had the midterm budget statement center around cutting spending. Flash forward to now, and it's about raising taxes. So talk us through the thinking here and how we've landed where we're at.
Thanks. I think, you know, the midterm, the medium-term budget policy statement, it wasn't really cutting spending, but it was at a spending level where we could see it wasn't quite appropriate for some departments. There was, you know, quite a large wage agreement that had been put through in the previous year. So a lot of the provinces were under pressure on salaries and wages. That pressure was really coming to the fore. You know, and if we weren't going to change their budgets at all, if we kept them the same as the medium term budget policy statement, there are a lot of the negatives that the minister likes to, and I agree with as well, but the minister likes to highlight, is that there were going to be vacant teacher posts. You were going to have teachers that might need to be fired. You were going to have doctors that would remain unemployed, even though they had qualified. You know, we've got troubles with the troops in the DRC. So there are a lot of departments, a lot of issues out there where the current funding scenario wasn't helping with frontline services and wasn't helping with the economy in the country. So, you know, the firm position from the minister was that we need to fix those issues. And to fix those issues, you need revenue. You know, as you mentioned before, we've got very high borrowing levels. We can't borrow more. So it's going to have to be on the revenue side, and we want to do it. So it was in effect, it's a boost in spending, but done through revenue resources so that we don't undermine the economy's debt position and our overall debt to GDP, which could lead to higher interest rates and all sorts of other negative impact.
As you said, you know, we understand having reached borrowing limits, and I'm going to get back to the argument presented by the expenditure team in just a bit. Before we do, Chris, of course, you know, the sums that are done on the back of how much revenue is coming in and how much is needed for expenditure, right? Is a big part of the problem. Not that we start off with unrealistic assumptions in the first place, where we, you know, overreach year after year, like a growth forecast of 1.8%. I mean, that ultimately puts revenue on the back foot when that's not realized, right? And your team then needs to find ways to extract more.
So it's also an interesting one. We were quite lucky, well, not lucky, but in the post-COVID period, we had a very strong commodity mini boom. And we got a lot of additional revenue in that post-COVID period that we didn't think we were going to get. And now that's come to an end. Commodity prices have come way down. Mines are struggling. We're not getting that additional revenue. Growth has been a little bit lower, but our change compared to, say, the previous budget is not completely dramatic. It's slightly lower, but it's not as bad as you would have expected with growth being a bit lower. So we were doing okay on the revenue front, a little bit of pressure, but it really is a case of if we had stayed with the MTBPS scenario, we would probably be okay from a debt to GDP perspective anyway. But the problem here is the additional expenditure. So it was, if you're going to have this big boost to health, to education, to home affairs, everyone else, you need to pay for it. So it was a case of trying to say, well, what do we need to do to get that additional expenditure in, rather than a case of there's been a big revenue shortfall and now we need to make up for it.
Okay, so what you're doing is extracting more because on top of the proposed VAT increase as it stands, government continues to be stealthy as well. We have personal income tax increasing by not adjusting tax brackets to allow for bracket creep, which is actually going to rake in more than VAT. So in this scenario where taxes have gone up, Chris, talk us through the impact as you see it on the economy, the consumer and households, and then, of course, the national coffers. You know, as you well know, South Africans are really struggling at this point to see how what we've come up with, that this was the best option on the table.
No, thanks. So, you know, that is a large increase. I wouldn't call it a stealth tax. Maybe it is a stealth tax to individuals because you don't see it. You know, it's you get your salary at the end of the month. It isn't a huge change compared to the previous month. And actually, you know, if your salary had stayed the same, the tax that came off would stay the same, but it's just not adjusted for inflation. So we try and be very transparent about it. We put in the budget that this is going to raise 18 billion rand, you know, for that 1 year alone. So we try and highlight that it's quite a big tax increase, even though on an individual basis, you don't really see it. So, you know, that really could be seen as a stealth tax. But, you know, from an impact on the economy point of view, you know, when we look at the research on tax increases and the impacts on the economy, value-added tax seems to be the least detrimental to growth. And for many years, we have been taxing personal income taxes. You can see personal income tax as a percentage of GDP just goes up and up and up and up. And here we said if we need a lot of money, especially in the original budget on 19th of Feb, you know, VAT will bring a lot of money in and it won't hurt the economy as badly. But of course, we're very worried about consumers, especially with the value-added tax increase. So we looked at, for example, how much a lower-income household would spend on food. And we said, let's see how much additional in rand terms that will cost. And now there are a lot of zero-rated products already that are quite well targeted in terms of VAT so that they don't pay it. But there are other products that aren't zero-rated, so they will pay. You know, and for that reason, the initial budget had quite a big increase in grants above inflation as a nominal value. It was 150 rand. You know, 100 rand would have been an inflationary increase, but you were giving every single old-age grant recipient an extra 50 rand just to cover the impact of that 2 percentage point increase in VAT. In this budget, it's an extra 30 rand on top of that 100 rand to try and cover those costs. So we recognize, you know, that they do, they are under pressure. It's a very difficult situation. We didn't want to increase the fuel levy because there's no zero rating on fuel. It affects everybody. The prices go through the whole economy. And transport costs are a huge component of lower income households, much bigger than in other countries. The World Bank have done a lot of research on that. So we tried to limit the impact on transport costs as well. But the lower income households that perhaps are above the grant value, that are starting to pay a little bit of income tax, they will struggle under this budget. The previous budget on the 19th of Feb gave relief on personal income tax for that first little cohort because we couldn't, you know, provide additional relief through zero rating or for grants for those individuals. Whereas this budget takes that away. So it's a quid pro quo. I mean, you take, you know, if you're going to give some relief on the one side, then you've got to get on the other side. And those are the balancing acts that we try and do all the time in compiling these budgets.
Okay, so we hear you and we get it, right? Less of a negative, I guess, than the other forms of taxes that we've seen come through, you know, the way you've pushed it through. But Chris, I've lost count of, I guess, the number of times I've heard, you know, South Africa doesn't have a revenue problem. We can extract revenue. We've got an expenditure problem. And it's not that we, you know, spend too much, but it's that we don't spend effectively. So bottom line, why aren't we cutting the fat? What are the guys in charge of the expenditure side of things saying?
I don't think anyone in the Treasury would disagree with you there. You know, and actually across the political parties, they also agree with you. And I'll say we need more efficient expenditure. The trick is it's very difficult to get rid of that expenditure tomorrow because you don't know where it is. You know, there's no line item that says this is the inefficient expenditure and let's cut that. Now, every line
Oh, how item easy that is, would be.
Yes, every line item is a program. Every line item, you know, is either for wages for what could be an important program, or it's for housing, or it's for, you know, provincial allocations, which could go to health or education. So it's so difficult to find those. And then you can find some, but then they don't add up to much. You know, so you might close down one or make one small program very efficient, but it'll only give you, you know, tens of millions, whereas the shortfall here is billions and billions. So it's something that we need to work on. And it's a very valid response from the public to say, no, but just cut. The problem is that as a treasury, we can't get that money immediately. But there are doctors sitting at home and there's teachers that might be, you know, fired or not be able to be paid for. So that is the other problem. And a lot of the push has been to say, well, fix those issues so that you don't have to do this again. And I really hope we don't have to do it again and we can fix these issues. The problem is they're difficult. And a lot of the responsibility sits within the departments and not quite with the treasury. So the treasury can't really go in and say, you must cut that, you must cut, or get rid of these efficiencies, get rid of those inefficiencies. The departments and the accounting officers within the departments are the ones who know it. So there's an interesting, you know, way forward that we have to see. Well, how can we improve this so that those like budgets can actually be trimmed down, or the inefficiencies can be gotten rid of? We've done a lot of spending reviews. There are only, I think, over 220 spending reviews that are done, and they're all publicly available, like on the GTAC website. And now it's about trying to implement those, and the departments would need to come forward and actually do that.
Look, I'm not going to be or to keep beating the drum, right? Because we're familiar with the calls: cut the bloated cabinet, reconsider above inflation public sector wage bill increases, strip salaries being paid to ghost workers out the system, get a handle on non-performing CETAs, tackle wasteful expenditure. The list goes on. But amidst it all, and I bring it up because of you talking about the departments being in charge, right? Zero-based budgeting has been brought up. Now, the counter to that has been that 83% of South Africa's budget is legislated. Still, should we not at least be reworking that 17%? So resetting departmental budgets, even at that scale, I mean, surely that's a start to finding out what's actually needed, where calls are loud for a more comprehensive spending review than all the spending reviews we've seen up to this point.
No, and I think it's a good point. And the one thing I wanted to highlight as well is that hopefully this will push, you know, departments, politicians, executive authority to start doing a lot of these reviews. You know, there was a line in the minister's speech about, you know, considering the second 0.5 percentage point increase in VAT, you know, and that it might be dependent on the success of some of these spending reviews and the success in other mechanisms and other issues to actually get growth going, which can bring revenue in. And that's a very powerful incentive, you know, for government to push forward on a lot of these issues. So hopefully we can do that. The zero-based budgeting, it sounds attractive. And I know the previous minister used to talk about it as well, Minister Mboweni. And it's quite difficult because that does mean you must cut, for example, whole programs if you don't think that they work. And cutting programs does mean getting rid of staff. So it means almost getting rid of, you know, civil servants if you're going to cut some types of programs, which is also quite a difficult thing to do politically. So those are definitely going to be explored. I think, you know, there's certainly enough intention within government to look at these issues. The problem is they don't happen quickly. And then if you need revenue quickly, you can't do it this way. Yeah. So, you know, we're going to have to work on it. I think the pressure from society is very useful to actually push these things forward. And hopefully we can get some progress.
Look, I'm getting buy-in from your side. I've got to ask you, though, where are your confidence levels sitting when it comes to a comprehensive spending review to effectively tackle some of what I listed in, you know, that previous question, yielding results? And what kind of timelines are we looking at? Because you use the word, it's up, or you say that, you know, it's a matter of implementation. And we know that hasn't really been South Africa's strong suit.
Yeah, I think, you know, my colleagues on the expenditure side would have a field day with this, I'm sure. But it's difficult to see how it could be done within a year and a half. They are very complicated issues. But hopefully, you know, in 2 years, maybe three, and I know that sounds too long because everyone wants it done now, you know, but these things never move very quickly, especially if you're talking about something as dramatic as like closing an entire program. And that's why, you know, I think the minister was misinterpreted. There was quite a lot of talk about, you know, the VAT increase was for the SRD grant. It was more like a thought experiment that I'm sure he was trying to say about, you know, if you had to say we got to spend on health or education, you know, one of the other things you could look at was getting rid of the SRD grant, and then that money could be allocated to health and education, for example. So it wasn't a case of, you know, the VAT is because of the SRD grant. But, you know, those are the things that you've got to look at to say, well, okay, if we want to do that, we've got to get rid of this. Otherwise, it's tax or borrowing. And, you know, now we feel as if we're getting to the limit, especially on the borrowing side. So they're difficult things to do. You know, hopefully, you know, in a year or two, we can actually see some real progress and some real, like, material changes to the spending environment on this.
As you cast the spotlight on the spending side of things, Chris, I mean, the big criticism is that, you know, we, of course, spend in areas that have a low multiplier effect, so short-term items. So where is the extra you're looking to raise being spent that's actually going to get growth going, which is ultimately the ideal way to raise revenue, right? What's pointing to a hint of a growth strategy, an effective growth strategy in play?
I think the big part of it is infrastructure. It's, you know, some of the additional revenue is going to be going towards these new infrastructure projects. We've got a budget facility for infrastructure, which is now going to be sitting many more times a year to try and look at projects, get them going. Do we need technical assistance to get these infrastructure projects going? There's been a lot of success from Operation Vulindlela on, you know, the transmission on energy. Now that's moving towards other types of government programs. We're looking at digitalizing government. We're looking at local government effectiveness. You know, water infrastructure is a huge issue. So those are the basics which firms need to be productive. You need power that's on all the time and stable. You need water. You need good roads. You need good transport. Our rail network has been facing difficulties, and we've got less tonnage hauled than we used to have. So if you put investment and, you know, infrastructure investment into those areas, hopefully it can reduce the cost of business, it can make businesses more efficient, and we can get growth going. I mean, the problem is a lot of this expenditure is also on, for example, you know, doctors and nurses and teachers. And you say, well, is that growth, you know, worthy for growth? A lot of it is also on early childhood development, but those are the things that really can drive growth in the medium term. If you can get 70,000 more children into early childhood development centers so that they are getting the basics of numeracy, they're allowing their mother or father or caregiver to go to work while they're at these ECD centers, that can really have a multiplier effect, but over the medium term, you're not going to see it immediately. But it is something that's very important for the economy to do and for society. So those frontline services, I think, are also very important. But the infrastructure is the one part of it that we're trying to push, as well as phase two Operation Vulindlela, to get this growth going.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's no denying whether you're sitting on your side or, you know, the side of the South African citizen, you know, looking inward into what's happening and the deliberations and the decisions are being made that are being made at a treasury level, Chris, there's no denying that there are important spending pressures, right? The thing is that we just need a clearer growth strategy, perhaps, and more spend being directed towards capital expenditure as opposed to consumptive expenditure. Spend has to be, as you've highlighted, on these growth enhancing activities if we're going to be as ambitious as we are with our growth targets. But also a distinction needing to be made between needs and wants for the moment. At this point, we seem to be just living beyond our means, where we have no more money. I mean, certainly, you know, not enough to be pushing an expansive policy agenda. And, you know, policymaking seems to often be putting the cart before the horse, whether we're looking at NHI or, as you've touched on now, early childhood development. Surely we need to first figure out the sustainable way to fund these things before signing policy into law. I mean, how do you make sense of that disconnect that seems to be happening when you have to come up with the funding mechanisms to actually make these things affordable?
No, and it's a good question, because there are certainly, you know, every government wants to improve social well-being, they want to improve communities, but it costs a lot. It does cost a lot of money. And We were quite lucky, I suppose, in the 2000s, where there was a commodity boom, there was additional revenue coming in. We could reduce debt as well as by spending on, you know, additional items. Here, because growth is low, it's very difficult to do so. And when we come into a tight point, it has been turning to the taxpayer. I mean, there was quite a few years we increased taxes from 2015 to 2020, quite a lot. And then we did turn to the expenditure side to say, actually, we can't tax more. And then there were some reductions in expenditure ceilings to try and reduce the expenditure side. This budget has been a little bit of a shift in that respect because it said, okay, well, that's enough. We're going to go on the expenditure side. But you've got to do more. But we need growth. And it's such a difficult thing to do because you can't magically just create growth. It's all of these little reforms. It's every little bit of uncertainty or another little law that hampers investment. Or so it's all of these things as a government that the government does has these impacts on growth, and we need to focus on them. I mean, Operation Vulindlela, I think, has been very successful in trying to drive some of those reforms. I think now it's got a lot of pressure on it to keep going, which is a good thing. And hopefully the presidency and the treasury can work together to get past these stumbling blocks to, you know, improve the potential growth rate. But, you know, in our best scenario is if we just grew. We wouldn't need to raise tax rates to get additional revenue. You would just get additional revenue because we would be growing. And then suddenly these types of programs and these big ideas are suddenly affordable. You know, at the moment, as a treasury, you've talked about what are the pillars for growth. Like, we need macroeconomic stability. We need debt service costs to stop taking up so much of the budget. It takes 22% of revenue. And if you were allowed to keep that debt going up, our debt service costs are just going to increase and increase, and it'll be completely unsustainable. So we're only at the start of peaking on debt to GDP and now trying to get it to go down. But if growth comes, that can be solved. These new programs can be solved. But until then, it's going to be very difficult conversations with taxpayers if we want to keep pushing it.
Absolutely. And as you touched on, you know, we've already started to see the shift that can happen if you fast track reforms, if you fast track inclusion, when there's a focus on policy to support growth metrics, right? New regulations governing PPPs that allow government to partner with private investors to fund, build, maintain, operate public infrastructure. All of that helps set a positive direction for the budget. How loudly, Chris, are you advocating, you know, for this as a lever that needs to be better made use of?
The PPP framework.
Yeah.
No, I think if we're in a scenario where government is struggling to raise funds for basic services and for frontline services, it's even, you know, it's very difficult to raise funds for other big projects, you know, or to, you know, to fund SOEs to do a lot of these investments. So the PPP framework for us is a huge driver of potential growth where we can use private sector funds. You know, if you look at the tone of government documents over the last 4 years, I mean, things have changed a lot in 4 years, both private sector participation, you know, in terms of SOEs and SOE support, in terms of looking at potential, you know, private partners in some of those SOEs. I think it does get lost in a little bit of the noise, but there's been a big shift there. And there's a realization that government needs to work with the private sector to get these things going. And they're trying to, and actively trying to, in a lot of things, from whether it's potential border posts or port authorities. They're looking at these issues and saying, actually, we do need private sector to come in to help us, A, because we can't fund it ourselves, but B, maybe they will be more efficient. So it's a very good start, and I think we just need to keep pushing it.
Yeah. Chris, before I let you go, risk. How are you planning to compensate for the risk that the current geopolitical tensions bring with it? I mean, do we have enough of a buffer, if any, to withstand unpredictability?
No, it's difficult. And that's why, I mean, Treasury has been so firm to say we've got to stabilize debt, we've got to get it down, because we don't have much of a buffer. I mean, even in this very last budget, you know, we've used a little bit of the contingency reserve in order to pay for some of the issues that we couldn't pay for because we couldn't get the previous VAT increase through. So, you know, the contingency reserve is a little bit low, but, you know, on a macro level and a bigger level, you know, the debt to GDP is too high. If we have another COVID shock, you know, it will go up quite dramatically again, and we'll be in trouble again. So we need to try and stay stable. We need to have you know, a sustainable finance architecture. So it's We are a little bit worried about that. Hopefully, you know, these geopolitical issues won't have too much of an impact. We have some negative scenarios in our budget reviews where we do look at this, and it can be a little bit scary. But we are hoping to keep through and not have those big negative impacts.
Well, Chris, let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined us in conversation today. A pleasure catching up with you. Chris Axelson is acting head of tax and financial sector policy at National Treasury. And that's where we leave things for this episode of the Think Big series. Remember, the series is freely accessible and shareable with anyone, whether you're a PSG client or not. So do keep the conversation going. For now, it's goodbye from me until the next one.